Let's talk with our good friend Matt Zimmer. He's with the Argus Leader. He's with us every Tuesday. He follows Augustana, follows USF, and once in a while covers the Sioux Falls Stampede. Matt, what do you think of all this trading the Stampede have done with Tri-City in the last week?
I think it makes some sense. I mean, you know, they're a team with extremely high expectations. I mean, I would go as far as to say that they entered this season, you know, Clark Cup or bust. I mean, because they were pretty close to the Clark Cup last year, and they brought almost all their players back from that team, which is really rare in the USHL. And so, you know, when you're in that situation, you kind of have to hold people accountable. And they got off to a really good start. But now recently, obviously, they've had some struggles, particularly on their home ice, but then going on the road didn't really solve it either. And so, you know, I think Kerry Eads is the kind of guy who doesn't want to just sit around and wait for things to improve on their own. You know, I think part of it is trying to hold people accountable and send a message that they're not going to tolerate guys not doing their jobs. But I think also part of it is they're trying to get better.
Yep.
You know, the two guys they acquired from Tri-City, they acquired their captain defenseman, and then the forwards, their leading scorer. So it's not like this is just, you know, let's shake things up and see what happens. They picked up two of Tri-City's best players. And that makes sense, too, because Tri-City's the teams that have been kicking them around the last couple of weeks. I mean, they're below them in the standings and, yeah, and not going to the playoffs, but I think they beat them 5 out of 6 times. So it makes sense that Kerry Eads would look across the ice and say, geez, I like that guy, or I like that guy, because they're beating them every night. And from Tri-City's standpoint, it's pretty common in the USHL for teams, if they realize, okay, we're probably not going to the playoffs, let's see if we can send one of our veteran guys somewhere where they can be part of a run. So I think there's a bunch of factors all coming together, so I understand what they're doing.
Christian Horn got today. Garrett Cecere, Nolan Glukowski expected to be in the lineup when they host Cedar Rapids on Friday. Talked a little bit about this earlier in the program. Minot State football, they will name a new coach by the end of the week, and a couple of names that we know of: Todd Hoffner, the former coach of Mankato; Mike Aldrich, the former Augie coach, now down at Wayne. Any idea if one of those two guys could be the leader to get that job?
Boy, I'd be really surprised if it wasn't those two. I mean, no disrespect to the third candidate, who I can't remember his name, but I know he's a coordinator.
Vicko.
At Wisconsin-Stevens Point.
I think it's Vicko at Wisconsin-Stevens Point.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Minot State is not a real attractive job. Let's not kid ourselves. It's up in Canada. They don't have a great tradition, at least. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I mean, they were a pretty solid NAIA team, but they're trying to make the transition into a really good Division II league. And when they were in NAIA, they were nowhere near as successful as USF. So they have a much bigger mountain to climb. And then, you know, the location, that too. So when Paul Rudolph, their previous coach, quit to go to North Dakota, I thought, man, what a tough blow for Minot, because he's a good coach, and I know he's really respected in the region. Well, now, good timing for Minot State, because I never would have thought they'd have two candidates as attractive as they have applying for that job. I mean, Mike Aldrich took Augustana to the greatest season in school history. You know, he went 22-13 in 3 years at Augustana and was a very successful defensive coordinator before that. And Todd Hoffner, I mean, you look at where the Minnesota State Mankato football program is right now, he had a lot to do with that.
Yep.
I mean, they're one of the premier Division II teams in the nation, and Todd Hoffner had a lot to do with building that. He was a Division I offensive coordinator at USD under Ed Meyercourt. I mean, the guy's got a great track record, and let's not kid ourselves. Part of the reason that he's interested in this job is because of the legal stuff that he had to deal with the last couple of years. Otherwise, he'd be somewhere else. But hey, that if I'm Minot State, I look at it that as, you know, a stroke of luck on their part, because I think everyone at this point understands that Todd Hoffner isn't guilty of being this horrible person that he was sort of made out to be at the time.
The judge said those charges should have never, ever been filed. I mean, that's a big...
Yeah, I mean, I think at the worst, people think that, oh, okay, he maybe had a lapse in judgment, you know, did something that was maybe that he shouldn't have done. But I don't think anyone is looking at him as a criminal or a sex offender or anything like that. And, you know, for his sake, I hope that whether it's Minot State or all the other schools, because I know he's applied for a lot of other jobs, I hope people are, you know, looking at him just as his football credentials and not saying, oh, well, we can't bring this guy in because of this stigma or whatever, because I think it's pretty clear, like you said, that you know, those charges were dropped. It's not like he went to trial or anything like that. It eventually became clear that he was not guilty of what he was being accused of.
You know, and I got to think that if and when Todd Hofner does get this first job after this mess that happened in Mankato, you could very easily use the Minot job to springboard back up to something else.
Well, that, and you know, that's absolutely true. And that's not to insult Minot State, but whether it's Mike Aldrich or Todd Hofner, I don't think either one of them would be going there, you know, looking to make Minot State their home for the next 30 years. But, you know, that's the reality for a lot of Division II schools, and that's how you become successful, I think, as a program that maybe otherwise wouldn't, is you have to sort of sell yourself to these coaches as, hey, if you win here, you're going to be able to turn that into a bigger job because it's hard to win here. You know, if Mike Aldrich goes there and turns Minot State into a playoff contender, if Todd Hofner does it, he's going to have a lot of offers somewhere else. And then if you're Minot State, you know, you sort of turn to the next guy. And that makes it a little more difficult if you're that program that's a perpetual stepping stone. But, you know, that's all, oftentimes the realities of Division II.
Yeah, whoever gets the coaching job, they got some rebuilding to do because I think a lot of the players have left, too, over the last month or so. A lot of them saying they're not coming back because of what's been going on up there.
Well, they haven't been a great football team, so I don't know that that's necessarily a death sentence.
Sure. Matt Zimmer, Argus leader, joining us on Sports Talk with Craig and Chris, follows Augustana and USF Athletics, talking about the rivalry week last week. USF women get the first win against Augie at their place since they've been in the Northern Sun. And Augie, man, just trouncing USF. Which was there one that was more surprising on Friday night to you?
Well, I don't think anyone could have expected the Cougar men to be as bad as they were. And, you know, they're probably sick of hearing about it, and I hate to pile on, but, I mean, that was as bad as I've seen an NFIC basketball team play. You know, I mean, they were just never in the game. Yeah, part of it was they just didn't make any shots. I mean, they were 2-for-23 on three-pointers, and that's terrible. You're not going to win any games. But, I mean, when they played the first time at the Stewart Center, you really expected them to, you know, be fired up and ready to go, and I really didn't think they were. I thought Augie was the team that was the aggressor and played like they had a chip on their shoulder and like they were really into the rivalry thing. And later, USF players and coaches more or less admitted that yeah, you know, they were more ready to go than us. We got to make sure that doesn't happen this time. Well, it was even worse this time. I mean, they just were never in the game. They showed no fire and emotion. I mean, I don't know if it was deer in the headlights or what, but it was just a dreadful performance, and I'm sure they're embarrassed, and they should be, because it was, you know, they had a great turnout of students and fans that came over to the Elman Center, and, you know, I mean, they got to see the women win, but then they left at halftime of the men's game. It was just,
ouch.
It was really bad, and I asked Chris Johnson after the game. I said, and I alluded to this in the paper today, you know, when you have two outings in a row against your rival that go so poorly, not just that you get killed both times, but that your guys clearly aren't ready to play, or they're mentally, something's not there, do you have to sort of reevaluate how you approach this rivalry? Because, you know, something's not working. And he said, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously it wasn't a problem last year because in both of those games, the one that they won and the one that they lost, they were fired up. They were ready to go. They came out ready to play and determined and focused and all that stuff. And in this team, for whatever reason, seems to really struggle with it. So it'll be interesting to see next year how that works out, or if Chris decides to do something different, because for whatever reason, Augie was really in USF's head this year.
What was a more disappointing loss? Was it USF's just rolling over on Friday night, or was it Augustana blowing a 16-point lead to Southwest in a game that you even mentioned several times with the schedule that Augustana's got coming up? That's a game that they needed to have.
Yeah, I think that one hurts more. I mean, you know, if USF loses by 7 to Augie on Friday night, no one's making a big deal out of it. That would have been an upset one way or the other. But for Augie the next night after, you know, let's face it, they got to rest a lot of their starters too because they were so far ahead against USF, and they came out Saturday against Southwest Minnesota State. And, you know, they're a very good team. They're ahead of Augustana in the standings now. But once they built that lead, it's kind of like, okay, they're finally going to – would have been their first win against a winning team. And more importantly, like you said, with their schedule being as tough as it is the rest of the way, they still got to play Winona twice. They still got to go to St. Cloud and Duluth. They have to play Minnesota State Moorhead. They have to play Northern State. I mean, they got a really tough schedule. So you got to win these games at home, especially ones where you get a big lead like that. they had plenty of chances to push it to 20, 25, and they just didn't do anything. And you kind of got this sense that, you know, Southwest's a team that has a habit of coming back, of winning in dramatic fashion, and the longer they let them hang around, and then boom, all of a sudden they take the lead with like 5 seconds left, and just like that, it's over. And, you know, there wasn't so much a – I didn't get a sense that Tom was mad at the guys after the game, but just really shell-shocked and I think aware of the fact that this is a loss that could really come back to haunt them later.
Matt, what's your assignment the rest of the week for the Argus Leader?
I got a high school game, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday, and then USF home this weekend.
All righty. Good stuff, man. Hey, appreciate the time. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Zimmer, he just got done with his weekly live chat at ArgusLeader.com.